what these signs mean and what kind of hazards they might propose to you and your family. So that's another reason why WMS training is necessary. So I gave everyone a booklet, and if you could follow along in the booklet and record things as we go. At the end, we'll have a little quiz, and everyone will complete that and then hand that in at the end. I'm going to try to make it as fairly quick as possible, but if you have any questions as we go, please feel free to ask them. And just to start things off, I found some interesting information on the web about food facts, and I thought, I got to think of something to make this a little more interesting, because I know it's kind of a dry topic. So I'll just kind of, as we go along, I might tell you a few things, unusual food facts to call. Americans spend approximately $25 billion each year on beer. A typical American eats 28 pigs in his or her lifetime. An etiquette writer of the 1840s advised, ladies may wipe their lips on the tablecloth, but not blow their noses on it. caffeine. This might be interesting for people. There are 100 to 150 milligrams of caffeine in an 8-ounce cup of brewed coffee, 10 milligrams in a 6-ounce cup of cocoa, 5 to 10 in 1 ounce of bittersweet chocolate, and 5 milligrams in 1 ounce of milk chocolate. California's Frank Epperson invented the popsicle in 1905 when he was 11 years old. China's Beijing Duck Restaurant can seat 9,000 people at one time. And chocolate contains phenethylamine, or something like that, a natural substance that is repeated to stimulate the same reaction in the body as falling in love. So there you go. So, WMS, this is kind of our format for today. We're going to do an introduction, talk a bit about the legislation, occupational health, classification and symbols, consumer products, labeling, MSDSs, information and training, and controlling hazards. So, WMS. WMS stands for Workplace Hazardous Materials Information System. And it's an information system designed to advise you on the hazardous materials you may encounter in your workplace. There's three key elements of WMS. And those are labels, MSDSs, and training. And suppliers of products that provide us with hazardous materials, they provide properly labeled products and the MSDSs to go along with them. And as an employer, we provide the workers with education and training. And the key outcome is a worker who is informed to the point where they can protect themselves from potentially hazardous exposures. The legislation. WMS is a nationwide system that involves both the federal and provincial legislation. Some of the federal acts and regulations that you see here are referred to in the WMS regulation. I'm just going to kind of read you a couple lines from the, this is the Ontario Health and Safety Occupational Act. And just a little line that it says here. So this regulation applies to employers and workers in respect of controlled products used, stored, or handled at a workplace. And for worker education, which is why we're here today, an employer shall ensure that a worker who works with or in proximity to a controlled product received from a supplier is informed about all hazard information. So we have a, Colleen has a copy of this in her book if anyone ever wants to go through it, has any questions about it. The provincial legislation, the Occupational Health and Safety Act defines the right of workers to know about the hazards which they might be exposed. And it defines the duties of employers to inform workers of any hazards and to provide training. And in addition, there are regulations made under the Act that deal with hazardous substances. And we'll talk about those later. Designated substances are 11 substances, such as asbestos and mercury, that are considered to be hazardous, and they have their own detailed regulations for handling. Responsibilities for MIMAS fall under three categories. Suppliers or manufacturers. Suppliers and manufacturers must do the following. As you can see on this overhead, they identify and classify the products, they prepare the supplier labels and MSDS, they revise or update the MSDS and labels, and they prepare labels. Now, Peter was kind enough to bring down a sample here. This is the product that he uses in his water treatment product. Yeah. And it's called the Lifol P. This is an example of a label that's provided by the supplier. There's specific details in both of those that are other requirements for labels. So these labels have to be specifically part of the startup data lines and having limits, and there's certain kind of fonts they need to use, and certain information that's required of them. Now, for any reason, if that label got torn off or couldn't read it for any reason, we as an employer are responsible to make a workplace label. And there's certain requirements for a workplace label, which we'll talk about in a little bit. So employers' responsibility is to create, apply workplace labels, what I just mentioned, obtain current material safety data sheets, assess the products produced in the house, worker education and training, and provide information in medical emergencies, and establish a WMIS program. And the WMIS program needs to be documented, communicated, and reviewed yearly or when changes occur. However, for people that don't necessarily handle them on a regular basis, it's not necessary to review it every year. However, for people like Peter or people in the bistro that they're dealing with these hazardous products, they would need a refresher course every year. The worker responsibility, so that would be you. To use or wear the equipment, protective clothing as required by an employer, to report hazards and causes of non-compliance to their supervisor or manager, participate in training, and understand and use the information that you're provided. And MSDSs must be no more than 3 years old. However, there are some that, if nothing changes within the product, that we're not required to revise the copy. However, it's good to get confirmation from the supplier that nothing has changed and just to write it down on the sheet. There are some exceptions to WMIS. Partial exemptions, explosives, cosmetics, drugs, devices or food, pesticides, radioactive materials, and products packaged as consumer products. These all have their own acts. So explosives are defined in the Explosives Act, cosmetics, drugs, devices or food, are defined in the Food and Drug Act, pesticides in the Pest Control Products Act, radioactive materials in the Atomic Energy Control Act. It still means, though, that people need to have the training for safe use. Complete exemptions would be wood or wood products, tobacco or tobacco products, manufactured articles, hazardous materials in transit, and hazardous wastes. There are properties of hazardous materials. All hazardous materials are either solids, liquids, or gases. Fumes, dusts, and smoke are tiny particles of solids suspended in the air. Example of this is welding fumes. They contain the tiny particles of the metals being welded. If you want to look at complete definitions, they're in the back of your manual in the glossary section. Now, there are four key routes of entry into your The first one is inhalation. It's the most common route of entry of hazardous materials. So once they're inhaled, they can directly affect your respiratory tract and lungs. Or if the particles are small enough, they can enter your bloodstream and affect the rest of your body. Dust such as asbestos and silica can cause lung scarring. Welding fumes and solvent vapors enter the bloodstream. Ingestion of hazardous materials can directly affect the digestive tract and or enter the bloodstream. Some hazardous materials accumulate in the liver or kidneys. Others, such as lead, affect the central nervous system. Inhaled materials can be collected in the mucus and subsequently ingested. Another route is injection, which is from needle stick injuries. It's mostly a primary concern in the healthcare sector. And they also talk a bit about education workers if they're working in a lab dealing with any other kind of puncture items. Also, they can be forced through the skin by a gas under pressure, such as compressed air. Absorption. Chemicals from any solvents can be absorbed through the skin or mucous membranes, where they can cause local damage, such as dermatitis, or they can also enter the bloodstream and damage other organs. And protective equipment, such as gloves or face shields, should be worn in these circumstances. The target organs along the route of exit are the liver, the kidneys, and the bladder. They play a vital role in eliminating hazardous substances from the body, but they can also be damaged in the process. Prolonged exposure to chemicals such as alcohol or carbon tetrachloride can cause inflammation known as hepatitis. Chronic hepatitis or a severe chemical exposure can cause scarring of the liver, known as cirrhosis. Now, I don't have an overhead on the last one, but there's a page in your manual there, page 8, toxicity. There's a definition for toxicity in the back of your manual, in the glossary. Toxicity is the ability of a substance to produce an undesired effect when it's reached a sufficient concentration at a certain site in the body. The more toxic the material, the less is required to produce harm. And a hazard is the potential of a substance to produce an undesired effect. And the effects, there's some definition of an acute effect is produced by an exposure, usually to a high concentration of a substance that produces immediate harmful effects, such as spilling acid on your body or breathing a high concentration of chlorine gas. A chronic effect is produced by an exposure, usually to a low concentration of a substance that results in harmful effects over a longer period of time, so such as smoking tobacco or drinking alcohol. Latency period refers to the elapsed time between exposure and the onset of the disease. For example, a single large exposure to asbestos dust can produce lung cancer 20 or more years later. Some definitions. Carcinogen is a substance or physical agent that can cause cancer in humans. An example of this is asbestos. A mutagen is a substance or physical agent that can cause changes in one or more heredity features by modifying genes. And a teratogen is a substance capable of causing changes to the developing fetus. An example of this is thalidomide. And who is responsible to classify? Under the Hazardous Products Act, it's the responsibility of the supplier to classify the controlled products. And a supplier means a person who's a manufacturer, processor, or packager of a controlled product who, in the course of business, imports and sells the controlled products. Now, there are 6 classes of chemicals. We'll talk about each one in detail. The 6 are Class A is compressed gas. Class B is flammable. Class C is oxidizing. Class D is toxic. Class E is corrosive. And class F is dangerously reactive. So we'll talk a bit about each class. Compressed gases, they pose an explosion hazard because contents of cylinder are under pressure. The container may explode if heated in a fire, and the container may explode if dropped. An example of a compressed gas is a fire extinguisher. So there's quite a few of those in our building, however they're behind glass, but if we ever needed them, they are a compressed gas and pose a danger. Other examples include oxygen, helium, ammonia, hydrogen, propane, and carbon dioxide. Precautions for compressed gas: always ensure the container is secured, store it in appropriate designated areas, and do not drop it or allow it to fall. Flammable or combustible materials, potential fire hazards: they may ignite spontaneously, may be a material which will release flammable products if allowed to degrade or when exposed to water. Combustible means a substance which, when heated to 37.8 degrees Celsius or greater, gives off sufficient vapors to ignite in the presence of an ignition source such as a spark or a flame. Flammable gas, for example, butane, propane. Flammable liquid is gasoline, flammable solid, magnesium or white phosphorus. And combustible liquid, furnace oil, diesel fuel, are many organic solids. And precautions: use only well-ventilated areas, store in designated flammable storage areas, avoid excessive heat, and avoid sparks and other sources of ignition. Oxidizing materials: they can cause skin or eye burns, increase risk of fire, and are explosion risk in the presence of flammable or combustible materials. Can cause other materials to react or break down. Precautions: store them in areas away from combustibles, wear body, hand, face, and eye protection, store in proper containers which will not rust or oxidize. Toxic, immediate, and severe: these are chemicals which could cause death following an exposure. They may be fatal if ingested or inhaled. They may be absorbed through the skin. And precautions: avoid breathing dust or vapors, avoid contact with your skin or eyes, and use any personal protective equipment or work in properly designed areas. Store only in designated areas. Risks: may cause death or permanent injury, may cause birth defects or sterility, may cause cancer, and may be a sensitizer causing allergies. Long-term effects: toxic precautions, avoid direct contact or inhalation, use personal protective equipment, work in ventilated areas, and store only in designated areas. Biohazardous, infectious: these are materials which can cause a disease or have the same effects of the disease, materials which contain organisms which are infectious, and materials which could contain biological toxins or allergenic sensitizers. Precautions: never open a container except in a contained containment area. Special training is required to work with these materials. Avoid all direct contact, avoid breathing the fumes, sterilize your area after work, and store only in designated areas. Corrosive materials risks: eye and skin irritation on exposure, severe burns or tissue damage is possible, lung damage if inhaled, may cause blindness if eyes contacted, environmental damage from the vapors. Some of these precautions are all basically the same for these dangerous products. Wear body, face, and eye protection, breathing apparatus, ventilation, avoid all body contact, and use appropriate storage containers. In class F, dangerously reactive materials: these are chemically unstable. They may react with violence in unexpected manners, may explode from heat or shock, may react with water, and may violently polymerize. Precautions, specific precautions will vary according to the products. Avoid vibration, shocks, and sudden temperature changes. Read the MSDS for specific storage and packaging handling. Consumer products. Consumer products. So as I talked about before, they've determined that it's the responsibility of employers to make sure that their employees are aware of the labels and can read them. So the potential for damage or risking their health and safety, that we've taken every precaution necessary to educate you. So these affect both consumer products and science education sets. Because that's mentioned, this is for this specifically for the education sector. So in university, where they have labs, that kind of thing. Science education sets, high schools, they would be required to provide the training as well. To be considered a consumer product, they must be packaged in a size typically available to retail customers and available to the public. If you put a consumer product into another container, you must follow the WMIS requirements for a workplace label. So if that was something that we went out and purchased a product, whatever kind of cleaning product or something that we needed, and we put it into our own container, we would then have to apply our own workplace label to make sure that the WMIS requirements are followed. So these are some of the borders. They indicate the degree of hazard. So when you see these borders on products, you'll kind of know what they mean. The first one is danger, severe hazard, immediate harm. The triangle one is caution, moderate hazard, long-term or hidden harm. And the last one is warning, special hazard or special requirements. And these are the types of hazards. There's flammable, which is a fire hazard, which we talked about previously. Poison, potentially fatal if inhaled or swallowed, may have serious long-term health effects. You wear gloves, face mask, and wash up after using. Corrosive, cause skin or eye burns. You're not to breathe the fumes, wear gloves and eye protection. Keep the container sealed and may damage metals. Explosive, handle the container with care, may explode if heated or dropped, may react violently with other materials, and keep away from heat sources. So when you look at a consumer product, they'll have the type, also with the degree of hazard. So together they make, for example, this one says danger corrosive. So this took place, implementation happened in 2003. So this was something new a couple years ago. And this year they're going to be phasing it in for educational use products. The symbols and borders never change. Location on the container is defined according to the Act. The style and type, so the fonts that are used, are defined. The hazard statements are defined. The warnings are defined. And the labels and locations are defined. So there's five categories. And these are toxic products, corrosive products, flammable products, quick skin bonding adhesives, and pressurized containers. Corrosive products, they can burn your skin or eyes, or a substance defined in the regulation as a corrosive. Very corrosive products cannot be sold as consumer products unless specifically approved. The symbol is not used for mild irritants, and directions on the label take account of the differing hazard levels, and thus should always be read as they will not always be the same. Flammable, flash point below 60 degrees Celsius, or it can produce a flashback or flame projector, spontaneously combustible or flammable in the air. Very flammable, cannot be sold to the public with the exception of fuels. Again, the labels must always be read. And toxic, a lethal effect or serious and irreversible harm, non-lethal. Very toxic products cannot normally be sold as consumer products. Quick skin bonding adhesives, fast drying glues, pressurized containers, internal container pressure over 275 kPa. Toxic substances are divided into three levels of harm, all which require the symbol. And there are also five subcategories. So again, you must read the label to make sure you know what you're dealing with. So we're going to go on to labels. Just to read you a couple more interesting facts here. Chocolate manufacturers currently use 40% of the world's almonds and 20% of the world's peanuts. During the Alaskan Klondike Gold Rush, potatoes were practically worth their weight in gold. Potatoes were so valued for their vitamin C content that miners traded gold for potatoes. During World War II, bakers in the U.S. were ordered to stop selling sliced bread for the duration of the war on January 18, 1943. Only whole loaves were made available to the public. It was never explained how this action helped the war effort. And fortune cookies were invented in 1916 by George Jung, a Los Angeles noodle maker. So labels are the first key element of WMIS. Labels contain easily understood information about the risks associated with the substance. There's two types of labels, supplier labels and workplace labels. So supplier labels, the supplier must classify the product and develop the label. Develop the label according to WMIS criteria, which we'll show you in the next slide, and attach labels to all their containers. So there's an example too of a label which is kind of similar to the one you saw there. So the information that this must contain is one, the name of the product, the name of the supplier, the reference to the MSDS, the WMIS symbols, the risk phrases, which state the hazardous properties of the product, precautionary measures, which state the precautions you should take when using the product, and first aid measures, stating immediate steps to take in case of exposure. So for workplace labels, the employer must maintain labels on all hazardous materials, create or obtain a workplace label according to WMIS criteria, and create a label if the supplier label is illegible or the product arrives in bulk without the supplier label. And there's three pieces of required information, and it's product identifier, the safe handling instructions, and a statement referring to the MSDS. And that's just an example in there of a workplace label. Are there certain circumstances where a supplier or workplace label is not practical and thus not required? So such as hazardous waste produced in-house, substances and piping systems, reaction tanks, or small volumes of substances for work in a designated area. For these and others, other forms of identification are permitted, such as a simple identifier example, blood, hazardous waste, or worksite-specific codes, color coding, warning signs with cautionary statements or symbols. Now we're going to talk about the MSDSs, which are the second key element of WMIS. MSDSs provide the detailed information of hazardous substances and the data on which effective workplace controls are used. So who is responsible? The supplier is to create them with all the prescribed information, and they are to update them every 3 years, or as needed, provide them in both official languages, and ensure they are complete. As an employer, we're required to carry out written inventory and assessment of all controlled products being used or produced in our workplace, obtain current MSDS and keep it updated, and ensure MSDS are available to workers. So I think I sent out an email in one of the PI resident emails. We have three or four booklets at PI that show
your red lines,
and they say MSDS there. They contain all of our MSDSs for all the products that we use here. So it's divided into three sections. We've got the Bistro. They have six products that they use currently. Housekeepers, our cleaning company, they use actually quite a few chemicals which are stored here in the building. And the maintenance, Peter, he deals with six or seven hazardous products. So they're all located in this binder, so if anyone wants to read through them, feel free. There's a binder down at reception. There's a binder at the Bistro. There's a binder Colleen's office. And there's also a binder. Where else do we keep a binder? I think that's it. Peter? Yeah, Peter has one. So. There's many types of information that's required on an MSDS. Number one is the product information and the use. If you want to just refer to the MSDSs that I gave you, and those are two samples of products that we use here, and just kind of follow along. Number two is the hazardous ingredients. Number three is the physical data. Number four, fire and explosion hazard data. Five, reactivity data. And six, toxicological properties health hazard data. And seven, preventative measures. Number eight, first aid measures. And number nine, preparation date of the MSDS. Now, there's key information. Usually, you'd want to look at the product identification and use. So what the name of it is, where it's used, what it's used for, and any hazardous ingredients that you need to be aware of. Preventative measures, so if there's anything, any equipment that you need, if you're going to be handling these products, it will tell you if you need gloves, if you need safety goggles, and first aid measures. So in case you were to inhale something or inject it, not likely, but all the first aid measures that would be taken if any of those things were to happen. Here's just a sample blank MSDS, but you can refer to your specific examples. All the definitions, I'm not going to go over every little section on the MSDS, but there's a glossary in the back of your book that goes through every definition and gives you the exact meaning. And now we're going to go into education, which is the third key element of WMIS. And without education, the other elements are basically useless. Workers must be able to demonstrate that they're able to understand and use the information on labels and MSDSs. So, as an employer, we are to provide and document training to workers who use controlled products, consult the Joint Health and Safety Committee, review the program at least once a year, determine the need for new or refresher training, and ensure workers can apply the principles of WMIS. And as a worker, you must participate in the training programs offered by the employer and use the information provided. There are three steps to control hazards. Recognition is identifying the hazard. Assessment is measuring against the standards. And control is eliminating or reducing the hazard. Other methods of identifying hazardous materials which may be in the workplace are inventories, MSCSs, which we have, workplace inspection reports, which the Joint Health and Safety Committee does once a month, injury or illness reports, hazard analysis, observations, and just using your common sense. So to control the hazards along the path, which is like an engineering control at the source and at the worker, which is personal protection. So the best controls to eliminate the hazard is to reduce it to acceptable levels, substitute a less toxic cleaning product for a more toxic one, isolate a hazardous chemical process from the rest of the building, Use a local exhaust ventilation, such as fume hoods, to capture the chemical before it gets into the air, and get rid of the problem whenever possible. If you cannot eliminate it at the source, along the path controls should be attempted. General exhaust ventilation can keep the concentration or airborne contaminants to acceptable levels. Barriers can be erected between the hazard and the workers, such as storing flammable compressed gases in an explosion-proof room or in a separate building. Good housekeeping is essential when working around chemicals, such as cleaning up spills promptly and putting lids back on solvent containers to prevent evaporation into the air. And the least desired method of control is at the worker, which is personal protective equipment, work practices, and training. These are some examples of personal protective equipment symbols. Cartridge respirators, chemical goggles, face shields, foot protection, hand protection, protective aprons. I wouldn't think that Peter needs to use any of these things. You do? For certain products? Okay, yeah. Okay, it looks like that's everything. Does anyone have any questions or concerns before I hand out the quiz? So you all know that why you had to come here after I was asked by everyone in the building. All right, so I'm just going to hand out the quiz, and if you could fill that out and then return it back to me, and then we're all done. Thank you.